And Dave versus SkyWest Airlines 24129. We recognize counsel for the appellant.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, I represent Kelly Day, who is the plaintiff in the matter below, and I will keep my eye on the clock and hopefully reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. And this appeal addresses whether a personal injury action is preempted by an amendment to the Federal Aviation Act called the Airline Deregulation Act. Here, Ms. Day was injured when a SkyWest employee accidentally struck her with a beverage trolley. Ms. Day has asserted negligence and breach of contract claims, both of which are predicated on the failure of the SkyWest employee to exercise due care in pushing the beverage trolley down the aisle. The district court below granted SkyWest's 12B6 motion to dismiss, finding that the claim was preempted by the Airline Deregulation Act. Now, personal injury claims against airlines have been in existence for quite some time. The earliest I could find was 1914, and they continued through 1930s, 1940s, 1950s. And in 1958, Congress enacted the Federal Aviation Act. Among many things, what Congress imposed was a savings clause, which preserved remedies existing at common law, and a requirement that airlines retain insurance to pay for personal injury claims. So not only is the remedy, the state law remedy for personal injury preserved, but there's actually a recovery is mandated. The source of recovery is required from the insurance. In 1978, Congress amended the act and enacted the Airline Deregulation Act. And the specific statute that we're dealing with here, Section B1, Bravo 1, a state may not enact or enforce a law, regulation, or other provision having the force and effect of law related to a price, route, or service of an air carrier that may provide transportation under this part. This appeal focuses on the nexus concept, whether Ms. Day's claim has the impermissible relationship to a route, rate, or service, and the issue being the service, because the beverage trolley is used in the beverage service, so we're going to analyze it from that aspect. Now, the Airline Deregulation Act was enacted after 36 days of hearings, 200 witnesses, professors, people in the air transport industry, labor unions, and not once was the concept of tort immunity or preemption of run-of-the-mill personal injury claims, and I use run-of-the-mill, meaning personal injury claims arising from the lack of due care, an isolated event, not an airline's economic policy that causes a personal injury, which I'll explain later in this argument.
Mr. Stoll, assuming that the ADA had any intention of addressing a situation like that, we are obviously constrained by our precedent, including in Arapahoe County, that treated under Hodges a food and beverage service as a service for purposes of the ADA. The claim directly relates to that food and beverage service. And so how are we free to consider the intent behind the ADA if the claim on its face relates to what we've already held in a precedent is a service, food and beverage service?
The Arapahoe County case dealt with airline access, approving an airport's certificate to have commercial airlines. And in that, the court cited with approval the Hodges broad definition of service to include the beverage service. I would ask the court to focus on the nexus element of whether Ms. Day's claim is related to that service. And the conduct which the state law here is seeking to address is unrelated to the service. The act of negligence, the lack of vigilance, the striking of the passenger with the cart was not part of the service to be provided. Therefore, under the ADA, we are not implicating the market-like considerations that airlines accept. Let me provide an example. There are two cases in which ADA preemption of personal injury claims was accepted. First being Second Circuit Fawamino case. There, somebody struck their head on those TV screens that come off of the top of the airline, and they sued. Now, that was an economic policy that the airlines imposed to have those installed in the airlines. They look neat. They look state of the art. They provide passengers with an aura of this is a high-tech airplane. It's good for marketing. It's the industry market driving the decision to use that. That was preempted. Now let's look at the Fifth Circuit case of Witte, which found preemption. In that case, we were talking about the seating was too close. So a group of plaintiffs got together and said it's causing deep vein thrombosis. The airline said, well, you're affecting our rates because if we start spreading seats out, it's going to affect our rates. That was a personal injury claim was preempted. And let's look and see how the market affected that. Now, airlines offer, you can pay extra to have more room. The market has affected that. So when we're considering the purpose of the ADA, which was your initial question, Judge Bacharach, the purpose of the ADA helps us understand which cases fall within the preemptive scope and which cases Congress preserved through the savings clause and the insurance requirement. So in this case,
well, in getting to your point about we're concerned about market and whether the claim would affect market, if you would permit this type of claim, that is anytime anybody's injured on an airplane, struck by anything, falling out of wherever, or passing by the person, wouldn't that affect the market? Wouldn't that affect the airline's bottom line?
Then we are getting into the second half of the analysis. Before, I should probably lead this off by saying we're guided by the Supreme Court precedent of Morales versus Transworld, which gives us a two-part test. Is the state law connected? Is there a connection with or reference to? And the second one, tenuous and too remote. Judge Briscoe, your question assumes so the first subsection has been met, and we go to the second subsection, which is tenuous. The courts have determined, including this court, in the court Dirty Boys, the case, the Dirty Boys case, which was the Wyoming statute, which required garbage disposal trucks to drive certain routes to hit certain waste stations or certain disposal stations. And when we were dealing with the tenuous aspect of that, this court said that just increasing the cost by driving different routes is not the type of concern we have. There are additional cases that have held that as well. The Ninth Circuit has held that in the case I cite in my brief begins with a anyway, it's escaping me now, but it is cited in the brief. And the issue that the court said that the cost, increasing the cost of doing business does not necessarily implicate the market style deregulation concerns that the ADA was trying to address. That case begins with a D, DILTS. That's what it was. The Ninth Circuit 2014 case. So when we apply the Morales standard, I asked the court to look at it first narrowly. Is the conduct which the state law is seeking to affect, which is only the breach of the standard of care, the negligence, the carelessness, the lack of vigilance, is that related to the service? I would respectfully submit it's not. It was not the intended service. It's not having an effect on the service. It was a fluke. It happened once by one employee, and it's a respondeat superior case. It's not the type of claim we see, for example, with the TV screens that I discussed or the spacing of the seats, which affect the airline's economic policy. And that's a distinction. So the first analysis of Morales is it connected with the deregulated service? On a narrow ruling, I would suggest no. Now, if we're going to go a little bit broader with connected with, the Hodges case provides a good example of when something is connected with. And what I've presented Hodges for the following reason. We talk about the purpose of the ADA Act. The Fifth Circuit was very articulate about what the ADA sought to do. Before the Airline Deregulation Act, in order for an airline to change its routes, up its prices, serve different markets, it had to go through an administrative approval process with the Civil Aeronautics Board. That was cumbersome, a lot of red tape, and states were concurrently regulating. So they did away with that. But leaving in the insurance clause, the Fifth Circuit said, if we write out personal injury claims that don't have the effect of deregulation that Congress was concerned about, we'll be rendering other provisions of the Federal Aviation Act, and the word was nugatory. We'll render them nugatory. So what's the purpose of having insurance if piloting services are preempted, baggage services are preempted, if a bottle of rum falls on somebody's head, like the case in Charis in the Ninth Circuit, where the court found that was not preempted, the case in Hodges, No, Hodges had the bottle of rum. Charis was another cart that struck a person in the arm. The emergency services, if somebody's injured during the emergency service, if the warnings that are provided are insufficient for the emergency service, anything an airline can do can fall into the service. So the courts have articulated this concern that we don't want a broad standard which encompasses everything. There has to be a meaningful nexus to the aims of deregulation. And I respectfully submit that this case dealing with human carelessness, human error, an isolated event that was not part of an economic policy and has no connection to the market concerns of the services that the airline offers, the routes they take, or anything like that, is not connected with, and certainly is too tenuous or remote from the aims of deregulation under the Dirty Boys case from this court's prior precedent. I'm at my 3-minute mark. I would say this, there's a field preemption argument, which is a very important argument, but was never articulated below. It was never raised. It's raised here on the first time. This court's opinion in Cleveland is still good law. U.S. v. O'Donnell did not overrule it, O'Donnell is limited to state regulations. This court, Judge Briscoe, in your opinion, you articulated that state regulations are what is preempted. And that left Cleveland, the other panel, still intact. So we still have the Cleveland panel, which says that personal injury claims are not subject to field preemption, the implied preemption, totally different. But if there's no other questions, I'll reserve the rebuttal.
Mr. Stahl, what is your position? What is your position as to whether or not preemption under the FAA is before this panel?
So preemption under the FAA is before this panel in connection with the Airline Deregulation Act, which right. is an amendment of it. Preemption under the Federal Aviation Act, implicit preemption, is not before this panel. That's the field preemption matter I said before. And I raise it because it has a huge implication for the industry, for plaintiffs, for defendants, and it was not developed below. And it certainly is an important issue which merits full development and vetting below. It was raised for the
first time. Was field preemption argued in any format?
Negative.
In the district court?
Negative. One sentence in the defendant's brief said that this case is preempted under the Federal Aviation Act, and then it went all into Airline Deregulation Act. Even Judge Nuffer's opinion puts his finger on that issue and says, since it wasn't addressed, I'm not going to address it here.
Right.
So just the confusion being, you can have ADA preemption and it can still be considered under the Federal Aviation Act.
I understand that.
Argue it. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right, thank you. Paul, let's stop the clock. Judge Murphy, do you have any other questions?
No, I do not.
All right, Judge Briscoe?
No, I don't.
All right, the court recognizes the appellee.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Scott Peterson. I represent SkyWest Airlines. This is a very factually simple case. We've got a Louisiana resident who boarded a plane in Portland, Oregon, headed to Fort Worth, Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. And at some point in the air, she was allegedly struck by a beverage cart and sued SkyWest in the United States District Court for the District of Utah, alleging essentially that Utah's common law, its common carrier laws, should dictate how SkyWest beverage service was performed on its flight from Portland to Dallas-Fort Worth. We moved to dismiss. The district court applied this court's very straightforward and, frankly, the Supreme Court's straightforward analysis in Morales and found that the claims were preempted under the ADA or the AIRDA to distinguish it from the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Mr. Peterson, does under your view of preemption, does Ms. Day have any cause of action in any form?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's sort of the central point here and the concern. Yeah, she does. Here's what she can do. She has multiple avenues. First of all, she could actually submit a claim to SkyWest outside of the court system, and maybe she gets paid for that claim in a way that's reasonable and makes her happy. Secondly, she could complain to the FAA for how she thinks she was treated if she thought SkyWest didn't treat her well. Thirdly, if this were an international flight, for example, which it isn't, as best I can tell, but if it were, she would have remedies under the various federal treaties, the Warsaw Compact.
But we're not concerned with that here. So you're right. you're saying because she doesn't have any administrative claim for damages under the FAA or ADA, does she?
No, she doesn't.
So she can complain and say, tell them to change their beverage services, but she can't get any money, right?
Not under her Utah common law, common carrier complaint, no. However, had she asserted a federal violation, some violation of the federal regulation or a federal law, we might be in a different position. We're not suggesting that she
where is it that if she claimed there was a violation of federal regulation that she has a damage claim?
Well, there are all sorts of federal regulations that govern the behavior of flight attendants. For example, it governs how they deal with.
I understand that. Are you saying if she claimed a violation of that, she would have a damage claim?
Arguably, yes. Had she asserted
arguably, does she or does she not?
Well, if she pleads it correctly, yes, Your Honor, that's right. If she and were who, to assert.
Who would be the named defendant? Who would be the named defendant? SkyWest?
Yes, SkyWest would, Your Honor.
And she could recover money damages?
Yes. But she has to, the reasoning for this, and it comes out of the Wolins case, if I can explain, as the court knows, in the Wolins case, the Supreme Court said, look, we're not going to preempt state enforcement of voluntary contractual obligations because that's not implicating the issues addressed by the RDA. It's simply
No. Okay. You're going on contract. I'm talking about does she have a tort damage claim under if she claims violation of a federal regulation?
Right. And what I was saying, Judge Murphy, was simply that if you apply the same principles under Wolins to a violation of a federal standard, a federal regulation or federal law, then you have it assuming the rest of your complaint. And again, this isn't the complaint before us, so it's hard for me to just.
I understand. Are you telling me there is a regulation that tells airlines how they must operate their beverage cart in such a way to avoid injuries? And that she could make a claim that they violated that regulation, telling them how they should move the cart up and down the aisle, she would have a tort damage claim.
There is not a federal regulation that describes the behavior of a flight attendant in the beverage service, as you just described, Judge Murphy.
All right, however, and what regulation would she use to file a lawsuit?
Well,
against SkyWest.
Yeah, getting back to this particular complaint, the complaint says you had improper lighting. There are regulations that involve lighting. And had she alleged a violation of an FAR that addressed lighting and said the lighting requirement was X and you did Y, that's a violation, that would be a different case. Had she, one of the other allegations is failure to train. Well, there are myriad federal regulations involving training of flight attendants. Had she asserted you failed to meet this particular standard under
so
the
not, what you're telling me, if she has a claim, as long as it's structured the way you want her to structure it, not just a plain, simple, vanilla negligence claim for tort and damages.
She has a claim if she can assert a federal standard, but not a state common law standard, which is what she asserted in her complaint. That's the difference, Your Honor. And it's because the ARDA preempts state law and Utah's common carrier laws applicable to airlines is the exact type of state law, particularly in the beverage cart circumstance. It is particularly the kind of law that would the ARDA was designed to preempt so that you would have uniformity across the states. Otherwise, you have 50 states imposing common carrier laws on how a beverage service is to be done by the airline.
You also say that that under the insurance clause is that she has a claim on that. I mean, she can make some claim to SkyWest under their policy. And if the insurance company on their own says there's no negligence, then she gets zero, right?
Under the insurance clause, maybe I'm not following your point.
You said the insurance clause provides her an alternative relief. What I'm saying is that in order to get her relief, she's completely subject to the whims of whatever the insurance company says, correct?
Well, she would make a claim, and the insurance company, I suspect, to your point, Your Honor, could deny the claim, sure. But
right.
But then if
so
she were...
So that they are the finder of fact and the applier of law, the insurance company against whom the claim is being made, correct?
For state remedy or for state causes of action under state law, right, because that is not one of the things that the ARDA allows to be enforced. But that doesn't mean that she's out, that she doesn't have a cause of action. That's what I'm trying to articulate, apparently not doing very well, is that had she asserted a federal standard, not a patchwork state by state standard, a federal standard, this case would be different. But instead she
wouldn't you land right in the middle of preemption big time if she did that? If she said that the lighting was bad, wouldn't that go to the very heart of how all airplanes are lighted? And if she would say you're not training your people well, that would go to the very heart of how you train all your people. And wouldn't that both of those points have great market influence?
Yes, on all of that, except that the ARDA is only focused on state laws, not federal regulations. And that's the difference, is that state laws attempting to regulate how beverage services are performed are preempted. Federal regulations governing how beverage services or lighting or warning, as all have been alleged in the complaint, are performed are not state laws. Those are federal regulations and laws governing that behavior. So the difference is if you do a straight up Woolens analysis and Morales analysis, is you reach the conclusion that Utah's common law involving common carrier requirements is clearly preempted under the ARDA.
But okay, let me ask you about that, not with the Woolens, but with Morales, with regard to whether or not the connection is too tenuous in light of the purposes of the ADA. First of all, do you agree or disagree with Mr. Stoll's premise that to determine whether or not the nexus is too tenuous or not, that we look at the purposes of the ADA, the desire to create a competitive marketplace?
Yeah, no, Your Honor, for the simple reason that both Morales and frankly, this court in Eagle Med, which is a 2017 case involving the air ambulance claims, said when you have express preemption, as the ARDA is here, and I'm quoting Judge McKay, when the statute contains an express preemption clause, we do not invoke any presumption against preemption, but instead focus on the plain wording of the clause, which necessarily contains the best evidence of Congress's preemptive intent. So
what about Judge Phillips in the Dirty Boys case involving the FAAAA that specifically went through the Morales analysis? Or even with ERISA, with Rutledge or Roe, if under the FAAAA, all of these cases seem to go through the analysis that Mr. Stoll is articulating, that you do have to look certainly at the express language and to determine whether or not there's an ostensible nexus. But it seems to me that I don't know how we can reconcile Dirty Boys with your argument that we can disregard all of the purposes that underlie the express preemption provision in the ADA. Where am I mistaken?
Well, you're not mistaken, but I would suggest that the analysis is done on the relates to prong of the preemption. So as what Mr. Stoll has suggested is that the court should essentially ignore the language of the preemption provision and talk about what was really intended by Congress. My point, and what I think Morales and Eagle Med point out quite clearly, is that when you have express preemption, you start with the language of the statute. And the statute here says it has to relate to, which this court and the Supreme Court has said, well, fine, if it's too tenuous, too remote, or too peripheral, and these are the ERISA preemption cases as well, then it doesn't relate to the particular price, route, or service.
And how do you reconcile that with Dirty Boys, where Judge Phillips specifically said that the state regulation on where the garbage trucks can stop specifically is property and would fall directly within the language of the FAAAA, but he still found that there was too tenuous a connection to the purposes underlying the exact same language of the express preemption provision?
Well, the relates to language isn't relates to the purpose. It's relates to the service. And so to the extent that you're reading the Dirty Boys case to suggest that the law is, when you look at relates to, you have to look at whether it relates to the purpose of the statute, that would be inconsistent with, frankly, Morales, Wolins, and all of the Supreme Court precedent on the ADA, but also on this court's precedent, at least in Eagle Med, which is a 2017 case. So I think you can make the same assessment as Dirty Boys, but not by referring to the purpose as the relates to nexus, but rather the relates to the thing to be preempted, the service, the route, or the rate. And I don't think there's any doubt. Myriad courts say service in this context includes beverage service. And again, had Ms. Day asserted a claim that involved a violation of federal law, we wouldn't be here. Most likely we wouldn't be here. I want to see what that complaint looks like. But instead, it was, I want Utah common carrier laws to dictate the behavior, the warning requirements, the lighting requirements, the how hard you push a cart down the aisle requirements, and the other duties as outlined in the complaint on a flight that neither originated in Utah nor ended in Utah nor involved a Utah resident. That's a problem. And the AirDA's design was to say SkyWest should have to comport with one set of rules governing how its services are provided. There are reasons, there are economic reasons why the marketplace ought to govern that, but particularly what we're saying here is Ms. Day's not left without a remedy. She has options. And if she had asserted a federal violation, a violation of a federal law or federal regulation, this case would be different. But that's not what was alleged. What was alleged is straight Utah common law claims. And those claims would have dictated the proper standard of care for SkyWest flight attendants on this flight. That's not what would have been appropriate. That's not within the intent of Congress under the actual language of the AirDA. Start with the language and run the analysis. The language of the AirDA does not distinguish, for example, between torts and other kinds of claims. My time's up.
It is. Judge Briscoe, do you have any questions for the appellant?
No, I don't.
Judge Murphy?
I do not.
All right, court recognizes the appellant for your rebuttal. You're on mute, Mr. Stoll.
Thank you. I want to make sure that we're not following Mr. Peterson's argument of confusing field preemption and ADA. Our complaint at paragraph 13, defendant SkyWest was careless and or reckless in the performance of its duties. Federal Aviation Regulation 91.13, no person may operate an aircraft in a careless or reckless manner. So if the standard of care under a field preemption argument is a federal standard of care, we've pled it. Now to answer Judge Briscoe's question, we did plead things about lighting, about training. Now that would implicate field preemption if the regulations are specific on how those conduct is to be performed. Because in that instance, the standard of care could be a federal standard of care. The issue would be a factual question whether it was complied with. The last point on the tenuous and tenuous theory, you're looking for a significant and adverse impact on the deregulation. That's the standard for whether it's too tenuous or peripheral. Significant adverse impact on the intentions of deregulation under the Supreme Court precedent. And these claims have been held not, run-of-the-mill personal injury claims have been held not to have that. There's not a single case presented by the defendant. I'm over my thank you, Your Honors. It was a pleasure.
I have one question, if I may.
Sure.
Mr. Stoll, are you arguing your contract claim, or are we, do we have that before us?
The contract claim, I didn't think that the district court ruled on the contract claim. The gist of the contract claim is that the contract is not in plaintiff's possession. What defendant has presented as the contract needs factual discovery. And if we can litigate that claim, discovery may show whether there was a breach of that contract or it wasn't. But the gist of the claim is failure to exercise due care. Their argument was it was duplicative.
You argued contract claim before the district court. Are you saying we don't have a final judgment by the district court?
I don't think there's a final judgment. There's a footnote saying that because it was finding on ADA, I don't need to address the contract claim. There may have been a reference in defendant's brief that there was criticism that we didn't attach the contract and therefore we didn't plead it. But I don't have a copy of the contract. And that's something that
don't argue contract claim at all in your appellate brief.
In the reply brief, in response to the appellee's arguments on contract, I addressed it. I didn't see it as being an issue because I didn't see the district court having ruled on it. But in response, in the reply, we address it.
Thank you.
Judge Murphy?
I have no questions.
All right. Thank you, counsel. This matter will be submitted.